The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Cochran, Judge Kirk. The Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. The second case this morning is A22-0012 in the matter of the welfare of the child of PAT.
Thank you very much and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We obviously are appearing by Zoom. If at any time you're having technological kinds of issues, you can't hear or people freeze or fall off, please let us know so we can stop the clock and make sure that we all know what you're saying. Please state your name for the record when you begin your arguments. These arguments are being recorded and will be posted on our website within a day or two. And with that, Mr. White, are you ready to proceed?
I am, Your Honor.
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Kenneth White and I represent the appellant mother in this matter. Basically, by this appeal, the mother challenges each step of the determination by the trial court, which resulted in the termination of her parental rights to the child. The first and I think most significant issue on this appeal is this question of whether or not the county undertook reasonable efforts. And in analyzing that, I think it's critical to note that in its brief, the county completely ignored the two most significant recent decisions by this court, ABD and ALH. And so those cases at this stage, at least, stand largely unchallenged. I think it's...
Did either of those cases involve abandonment?
Neither of those cases involved abandonment, as I recall them, Your Honor. But as the record reflects...
Doesn't abandonment change the whole dynamic here? How can the county engage in reasonable efforts if they're trying and she's not around?
Well, Your Honor, I think, the abandonment issue, if I could jump to that, there are... basically two bases under Minnesota law which allow for a finding of abandonment. There's a statutory set of presumptions, and then there's a common law doctrine that's been developed by our Supreme Court of abandonment. And neither of those applications arguments have any factual basis in this record, Your Honor. First of all, there's no statutory presumption. The statute which the district court applied requires that the mother or the parent abandon the child for a period of 6 months. Here, the record is undisputed that at least as of the point at which mother became incarcerated, 4 months after the birth of the child, mother became actively involved in trying to connect with her child and become involved with the child. Even the district court recognized mother's extensive efforts as of the point she entered into the prison system to the time of the trial to effectively deal with some of the issues that led to the effort to terminate her parental rights. The district court expressly discussed some of those efforts and recognized at finding A.20 the significance of those efforts in this particular case. So if you look at the statutory presumption, none of those steps apply. The county attempts to rely on a different subdivision in its brief, but first that wasn't used by the district court, so can't be reached here. But even if it could, the statute requires that the parent have no intent to care for the child. And here again, the record overwhelmingly demonstrates the intent to care for the child.
Just like she intended to care for her four previous children?
Well, Your Honor, again, the issue is abandonment. And did she abandon this particular child? It's not a historical discussion of what happened with prior children. It's a question of, did she intend to abandon this particular child? And again, the record is undisputed that as of the point of her incarceration, mother began significant efforts to parent this child, which included in her testimony before the district court, thoughts about how she would parent the child once she was released from prison in a month or so from now, June of 2020.
Go ahead. What about the period between when the child was born and when mother went into custody in July? Can you address that period and whether she evidenced any intent to parent the child during that period?
Well, Your Honor, there are two issues that I think are significant there. It is undisputed that during that time period, mother did not have significant interaction with the county, and in fact was attempting to avoid interaction with the county in many circumstances. However, mother explained that in her testimony, that she felt it was in her child's best interests for her not to have interaction with the county while she was actively using. And so the district court never found that to be an illogical or irrational or wrong explanation, simply never addressed it. So the testimony stands undisputed in this record that that was the purpose for which, mother avoided contact with the county over the 4-month period. But even if we look at that 4-month period and you look at the common law definition of abandonment, you have to address the status of the case at the time of the hearing. And at the time of the hearing, again, the record is undisputed here that mother was actively seeking to parent her child. She was deeply interested in it. In fact, at the very end of the record, and I'm afraid I don't have the page reference off the top of my head, there's a discussion of getting visitation between mother and child and the county working on accomplishing that. Here, mother is actively seeking involvement with her child. She's actively seeking visitation. She's doing all kinds of the kinds of things that one would expect in order for her to be able to parent her child once she's released from prison and is beginning to make those plans. Whether this court looks at
counsel, how is that ever going to jive with our permanency guidelines? I mean, you got 6 months on an infant and maybe a year, and there's no way she's in a position to parent.
Well, Your Honor, the permanency guidelines are that. They are guidelines, number one. Number two, that the district court, if this case is reversed and remanded, then the district court's going to have to deal with the situation as it exists. And the county is going to have to make a determination about how it proceeds, whether it proceeds with a new termination proceeding or a continued trial in relation to the termination, or if it decides to drop the termination for the time being and go with plans to hold the child in foster care or with a family member during the pendency of the ongoing CHIPS proceedings.
Mr. White, as a follow-up to Judge Kirk's question, I'm looking at finding 8.22, and the judge found that mother admits, the judge recognizes that the outcome of mother's projected treatment participation is uncertain. Obviously, when she's not in custody, she's AWOL, and when she is in custody, she is engaged in the services at the prison. But mother admits that she does not have a place to live after release, and it would be at least 1 to 2 years after release from prison if everything went well with treatment for her to truly provide the stability her child needs. That's a finding of fact that the judge made. Are you arguing that that's clearly erroneous?
I think, Your Honor, there's insufficient record evidence to support that finding. It is certainly true that mother admitted those things on the record, but just because somebody testified to it does not make it a factual finding. And in this particular case, the judge does not find as a matter of fact that these are timelines that would apply or exist in mother's particular case. She simply says, this is what mother testified to. Well, people testify to things all the time. Those are not factual findings. They are testimony, and the district court has to say, I believe or I reject this particular testimony, and the judge does not make that statement in finding 8.22. In addition, in finding 8.22, the judge applies what appears to be an inappropriate, improper legal standard in the last sentence. Mother's long-term plan is hopeful, but does not have a reasonably guaranteed probable outcome. There are no guarantees in life, Your Honor, and we don't hold people to a legal standard of providing a guarantee to a particular result. We hold people to a standard of a reasonable person or a reasonable parent or some other appropriate legal standard, not to a guarantee of what the future holds.
But don't we have case law that says if you're pointing to an uncertain time in the future, you fail?
Well, Your Honor, that I believe that that case law that the court is referring to talks about an indefinite or prolonged period.
Correct. And isn't that what we have here?
I don't believe you have that here, Your Honor. And part of the
by your party's own admission, it seems we have it here.
Well,
and certainly
I don't
her behavior in the first 4 months of this child's life.
Well, Your Honor, again, we have an explanation for the behavior in the first 4 months. And the other problem that we have, Your Honor, is all of those rules assume reasonable efforts by the county. And here we have no reasonable efforts by this county. They simply wrote off mother as of the time that this child was born. From then until her incarceration, they attempted to contact her. Once she was incarcerated, they wrote her off. They did nothing to assist her and to meet their statutory obligations for ongoing reasonable efforts.
But they had filed the termination petition before she was in custody, had they not?
They had, Your Honor, but the filing of a termination petition does not eliminate the duty to provide reasonable efforts. There's a specific statutory and framework that this court has adopted for how you stop reasonable efforts during the pendency of the termination proceeding. And that's specifically by filing a motion and establishing to the satisfaction of a district court judge and getting an order from a district court judge that further reasonable efforts would be futile. The county did not do that here. And you're not allowed to have, at the time of trial, an ex post facto, if you will, a determination that efforts in the past would have been unreasonable. This court has expressly rejected that notion. And so unless you're willing to overrule yourself, which you say you cannot do, that your prior decisions are binding on you, then you cannot look at what happened, or you have to look at what reasonable efforts the county undertook once mother was incarcerated. And here the undisputed record is that they did nothing. I think if you kind of try to synthesize the case law and statute, there are four issues which arise in any reasonable efforts case. The first is that the county has to determine the issues or problems that the parent has that results in the need for protective services or the pursuit of a termination of parental rights. The second is that they have to inform the parent about those services and work with the parent to understand what's in those issues. Third, they have to assist the parent in securing those services. And fourth, they have to monitor compliance. Here, the county failed on all four of those by this undisputed record. There is nothing in the district court's factual finding about the reasonableness of efforts by the county during the time mother was in prison. There's nothing the county argues that those occurred. In determining the issues, it's striking to me that there's much reference to mother's mental health, yet there's no diagnosis. Nobody knows what her mental health issue is. Without knowing that, you cannot have a treatment plan for it, and yet the county faults mother for not securing treatment for her mental health. You have to inform mother about the services. There's nothing in this record that suggests the county went back to mother and said, here's the 14 programs that are available for you in Shakopee, and here's the ones that we think you ought to pursue. There's nothing in this record that suggests that the county assisted mother in securing any of those services. And finally, there's nothing in this record that the county continued to monitor mother's compliance and progress during the time period between the termination or between the filing of the petition and the termination trial. And so at every level, the record demonstrates that the county failed in its duty to provide reasonable efforts to reunite the parents. And upon mother's release from prison, which will likely occur before this court issues its decision, mother will then be eligible for county services once again if you reverse and remand. And those services can resolve a number of these issues, the housing, the mental health, and so forth. So, Your Honor, we would ask this court to reverse this matter and remand it for further proceedings consistent with whatever the ultimate decision of this court might be.
I am sorry, my...
We lost you, Denise, I think, unless you've lost me.
Yeah, we can't hear Judge Riley.
Oh, it says it's been restored. I think I'm back, am I, Sue? I'm sorry. Mr. White, for my benefit, could you just wrap up your argument?
Certainly, Your Honor. As I stated, we would ask this court to reverse the district court determination and remand the case for further proceedings consistent with whatever this court ultimately determines. Depending on how you decide the case, you end up with different remand instructions. If, for example,
Thank
if you,
you
find
much.
No reasonable efforts, then the case has to be remanded with dismissal of the termination of parental rights petition, and the county is left to with the CHIPS and with the restoration of services to mother.
Thank you very much. Attorney for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Joseph Sano. I am the county attorney for Nobles County, representing respondent Nobles County Community Services Agency. Your Honors, what the court has before it today is the tragic case of a mother who has struggled with mental health, chemical dependency, and stability issues for years, not just in the instant case before this court, but since at least a period of 2019. As noted on this record, she has voluntarily transferred or terminated her rights to four previous children, including one that was discussed in this proceeding, a recent voluntary termination of rights that occurred in approximately 2019. Bottom line up front, Your Honors, is that the district court absolutely hit the nail on the head when it found multiple statutory bases to support termination of parental rights, that the county engaged in reasonable efforts, both post-incarceration and during the time of incarceration, and that termination is ultimately in the child's best interests. I would like to take the court back to 2019. At the district court level, there was a substantial testimony from both mother's probation agent and the current social worker assigned to the case, discussing the experiences that the county as a whole had with the mother in this case and the gambit of services that it offered. The record shows that there was multiple treatment placements, both inpatient and outpatient, over the period of approximately 2 years. And unfortunately, while there were moments of light and minor progress, ultimately the mother was simply unable to conquer her demons and overcome the behaviors that led to her addiction and behaviors in the first place, ultimately getting discharged from treatment unsuccessfully either simply leaving or being asked to leave by the treatment staff, which resulted usually in a probation violation. Mother would either be taken into custody, at which point they would try it again. So the reason I bring this up is to show that this has certainly been an ongoing effort. And by the time we filed the permanency petition in this case, we had already invested countless hours of treatment staff time, county staff time, and ultimately resources on attempting to help give the mother the tools and ability she needed to resolve the issues in the past that had led to her giving up on these four other children that she had.
Well, can you address the timing of the filing of the case plans by your client? I'm troubled. The first one was filed in May of 2021, as I see it. And I understand that mother didn't sign that one because she was AWOL. But then after she was in custody in July, it wasn't until November 4th, which is after the first day of the TPR trial, that the county filed a case plan update. I'm troubled by the timing of that.
Well, understandably, Your Honor. And as you iterated, it is problematic to case plan with an individual who does not want to case plan. The simple act of filing a piece of paper, stating what we already know were her issues based on the previous cases and her contacts with probation, it may have been late from the statutory standpoint, certainly, but this comes from the fact that we tried, we were willing to meet, we were willing to do whatever it takes to discuss it.
But my point is that after she's in custody in July, she certainly was available to your client.
Well, that is normally, in a normal world, that would be true. But I believe the record does reflect that their access to the mother, even in the local jail, was highly limited due to the COVID-19 pandemic. I believe the social worker testified that they were able to have a phone conversation, but face-to-face comprehensive planning was difficult. And then further, once she was transferred to the Department of Corrections at MCF Shakopee, I believe the record also shows that for one, she was not even able to attend an intermediate dispositional hearing in the underlying CHIPS case due to the facility's COVID-19 protocol and the fact that she was in quarantine. And then there were situations where they would try to arrange visits by Zoom or telephone. And due to the nature of the pandemic and the lockdowns in place at the facility at that time, communication was spotty at best. It was not like the, even a few years ago, where you could contact the facility, make arrangements for a visit, and would go off without a hitch. So much of it was dependent upon what were the case numbers in the facility at the time. And, you know, could they arrange to have a session to even do case planning? It's a very attenuated and admittedly dysfunctional line of communication, as I understand it to be. You know, and that the standard here is not necessarily superhuman efforts or, you know, above and beyond, but certainly in terms of reasonable efforts and attempts to communicate, the spigots, so to speak, had been open fully for the entire time that mother was out and about, and she could have chosen to voluntarily avail herself of those services like we've been trying to get her to do literally for years.
I want you to address the reasonable efforts that the county made after she was in custody.
Certainly, Your Honor. So in looking at the record before the court, the social worker testified that there were communications with the mother's case manager in Minnesota Shakopee. Now, admittedly, the social worker could have been more specific as to the number of conversations he had. That is not in the record, but it does indicate that he did have conversations with the case manager, and they discussed many of the same concerns that the agency had prior to her being committed to the Commissioner of Corrections. The testimony on the record is not super specific, unfortunately. I believe they stated she was going to be looking at chemical dependency treatment, but the difficulty with that is that I believe she was waitlisted in part, and due to the fact that DOC was only holding, I believe what they describe as absolutely necessary services, and apparently some of the services that Ms. Tate, was seeking and was eligible for simply were not being offered at that immediate point in time, or would be offered later once the wait list had shortened up. The difficulty in this case, as all cases with an incarcerated parent, is that when they're in the custody of the Department of Corrections, they're in the custody of the Department of Corrections. And that's not to say that reasonable efforts and case planning is impossible, but it is more difficult because you have an extra step to go through, and particularly when facilities across the state are being locked down and pandemic restrictions are being imposed, makes it much more difficult to do detailed normal case planning with a parent who is not in custody. So it's not to say that we did not engage in case planning or try to make reasonable efforts. It's just due to the nature of the situation, we could not be as aggressive or as detailed as we would with a typical parent not in custody who's willing and able to come meet with the agency and hash this out in a typical case.
Counsel, can you, Mr. White noted that you did not address the recent decision of this court in ADP, a precedential decision in your brief, or ALH, which I believe is non-precedential. Can you discuss whether the district court's decision is consistent with the precedential decision ADP? Or yes, that's the precedential one.
Oh, ADB, yes, Your Honor. Well, as I read that case, Your Honor, the holding of the Court of Appeals in that matter was that the district court abused its discretion when it made a post-trial determination that efforts to reunite with father and child were futile. I don't believe that's what the district court held in our particular case. It simply held that at least one statutory basis had been satisfied, that the agency had expended reasonable efforts up to the time of the hearing and at the time of termination. The district court never did specifically make a finding that further efforts are futile. Given the multiple statutory bases that the court found were proven by clear and convincing evidence. So I think that's one key distinction. And in the case of ADB, we don't have issue with trying to reunite with the father because he is deceased. So that would leave the mother. And like ADB, we have detailed extensive efforts to try to provide reunification services from the filing of the initial CHIPS petition, up to the time of termination. And it is also true that we did not specifically seek an order from the court declaring further reunification efforts to be futile because we wanted and we hoped that mother would change her mind and take advantage of what we were offering and come in and come work with the county. The problem is that she did not choose to do so. And we filed that termination expecting that mother would continue to do what she'd been doing. Which is not contact the agency, avoid the social worker, and continue to basically do what she's been doing. And is simply through her bad luck that she was arrested on a warrant and brought in. At that point, she allegedly claimed that she wanted to take advantage of services. Well, and it's not that we weren't willing to continue doing it. It's simply that we're, as the record shows, we've tried multiple options multiple times, and it's becoming clear that mother is going to need something more than what we've been able to offer traditionally. So, and if I may, I may turn to some comments that Mr. White had made. There are multiple bases alleged and proven per the district court. So I would like to briefly touch on abandonment, as that is what Mr. White had a few moments to discuss. I think the record absolutely shows that mother did have the intention to abandon her child in this case. First of all, the statute 260C301 does note a presumption applies at 6 months in the case of an infant. But the statute also states that the court does not necessarily have to find those factors in order to assume that a parent intends to abandon the child. It just means no presumption is applied. So in this case, the record shows that essentially since the child was born, mother has had no contact, no visits, no cards, no money, you know, no gifts, not even bothered to call the agency to inquire how she's doing or if there's any appointment she could attend. And it's certainly, it's impossible to prove a negative, but the court had the opportunity to speak with the mother and review the evidence and the history of this case. And it made the determination that you don't speak to your child or contact your child for almost 6 months, that you can reasonably assume that that child has been abandoned. And the court simply did not find mother's stated reason credible, that she didn't think it was a good idea to visit her child while she's continuing to use drugs. Well, that's a pretty strong indication that her priorities are something other than parenting. It's continuing to use and continuing to evade probation and evade the agency. I look like I'm about out of time. If anyone has any questions for me?
I don't see that either of my colleagues do. Thank you for your argument. Mr. White?
I remembered to take myself off of mute. Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address a handful of the comments that were made by counsel. First, there's a long recitation of what happened from 2019 and going back. The issue at a termination trial, however, is what is the status of the case as of the time of trial? And yes, we're informed by history, but the question is not what historically has occurred, it's what is in front of the court as of the time of trial. And all of those events in 2019 do nothing but help inform the district court about what has gone on. The second major flaw, I think, in the county's argument, especially in relation to the case plans and case planning, is there's nothing in the record about what counsel says. There is nothing in this record that suggests or shows that the county undertook any kind of extensive discussion of a case plan with mother while she was in Shakopee. In fact, the county only made a single telephone call according to the record. And if you look at pages 107 to about 110 of the transcript, there's a discussion by the district court of ongoing visits with mother and child and the difficulties in getting that set up. But the county only started that effort a month and a half before the second day of trial. That takes you to sometime in late September. Well, mother's been incarcerated in Shakopee since July. There's nothing in this record to explain why the county waited from the end of July, first part of August, until the end of September to begin to try to set up those visits, other than the county has written this parent off and simply doesn't want to provide further services. And in fact, counsel suggested that with his comment, we've spent lots of money on mother. Well, yeah, sometimes you get to spend a lot of money on parents trying to do what you're statutorily obligated to do. Then there's the questions of in developing the case plan and in contact with mother about the communication with mother and her case manager. And I would encourage the court to look around the page 50, the beginning of the cross-examination of by trial counsel of the social worker. And you'll see that there's only about a page or a page and a half of total discussion of what occurred that the social worker did. And none of that tells us anything about how the social worker dealt with or engaged in the kind of activity that is significant and required by statute. And lastly, Your Honors, I'd like to address the best interests, because even if this court finds reasonable efforts and a statutory basis, which I don't think exists in this record, you still have to then look to, or then you need to look to the best interests of the child. And here, everyone agrees the district court applied the wrong standard. And under Tangi and its subsequent decisions, this court has to reverse and remand. This court does not rebalance the factors and try to determine whether or not termination is in the best interest of the child. It does not engage in fact-finding or reweigh the evidence. In fact, this court stated that explicitly in a recent May 2nd decision, an unpublished one admittedly, involving the children of BH, Boy Hero. But that's at 2022 WL1297638. So again, this court has established that unless the district court does its job and applies the appropriate factors, you have to reverse and remand. And here the record's undisputed that that the district court did not. And so, Your Honors, we would ask that the case be reversed. If this court finds the lack of best interests and the lack of any statutory basis upon which to justify the decision, then the case is simply remanded and the termination proceeding is dismissed. If this court finds that the best interests analysis is flawed, then the case has to be reversed and remanded for further proceedings on the best interest factors. And either way, we end up with reactivating the CHIPS case upon mother's release from prison and the release of this court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case was well briefed and well argued, and we will have our decision out within the 45-day statutory time frame.